From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of October, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Gormal, Illinois. We'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Ben Brown from the Ohio State will be here. He's an agricultural economist to take a look at the marketplace. And we'll check out what's happening in the cash grain market as well right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today up 3 1/4. It settled at 405 1/4. The March at 410 1/2, 3 1/2 higher. And the May at 412 1/4, 3 3/4 higher. July up 3 1/4 at 412. And December at 398, 2 1/4 higher. November beans 1054 1/4, 4 1/4 higher. The January up 3 3/4 at 1054. And the July soybeans 1039 1/2, up 4 1/4 cents. Next year's November 973, 2 3/4 higher. Bean oil futures down 46 cents at 3253. The bean meal $5.70 higher at 373.20. Wheat futures July soft red $6.10 and 3/4 1/2 and 3/4 higher. And the hard red at $5.79 a bushel, up 3.5 cents. Live cattle futures in the October down $3.15 at $104 even. Feeder cattle at $134.60, $3.50 lower. And lean hogs, $1.62 1/2 higher in the lead December. But the February on out were lower, down a dime in that February at $70.85. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace for this Monday afternoon. Hey, good to be with you. A little gray, a little colder. Farmers are still in the field working, though, pretty hard, I think.
Yeah, they've been fairly aggressive. This is one of those years that they've just kept a moving, and barring no breakdowns, they made some significant headway. This afternoon's harvest progress expect to show corn as a nation upwards of 60% complete and beans over 82% complete as a nation. Harvest activity, you know, guys have wrapped up some beans in some areas, other than just, the later beans for the most part. Concern about bean moisture did dip down into the 9% area, so a little moisture would be beneficial. Same thing in corn. The floor season corn's 19%, but some of this earlier corn's moved down to this 13% moisture reading. So we could see a situation where we lost some bushels on this dry weather we've seen in through here. Yields, still kind of disappointing, guys. We're looking for 250, 260 corn, and it's coming in 220, 210. The beans kind of all over the place. Expectations of 80 bushel beans, but there are some 70 and 60 bushel beans. So we've got a crop out there. How big? We're going to debate that, but judging by just visiting with producers here in the eastern Corn Belt, I'd say these yields are probably a notch high at the moment. But, we'll go through that whole process going clear into next September, figuring out what type of inventories we have.
You know, you think when we passed 100 bushel acre corn, that when they were expecting 130 and only got 110, they were disappointed. I don't know why that popped into my mind, but I was like, yeah, better than 200 bushel corn. Disappointed, though. Anyway, nonetheless, producers have got things yet to think about. Many have been worried that they priced out their soybeans or a lot of soybeans too early. On the flip side, I think there are more than a few that just haven't sold. So what do each side of that equation do at this point in time, if anything?
Well, on the beans, it's been a phenomenal moving through here. We're at 2.5-year highs. For those that listened to the program way back in August, instead of selling beans at $9 and did the KISS method, bought a put option, $9 put for 9, 12 cents, yeah, that was wrong, but you still had the cash beans to sell higher and through here. No, we've been recommending continue to move some inventory out. And the thing is, if you move the inventory you want to replace, you got to do it the same day or fairly quickly. Because what's happened, producers moved some cash grain and have not gotten the opportunity to replace it just yet. And that's kind of frustrating because we've seen one of these lifetime deals where the market just rallies clear through harvest. So that's been quite of a challenge. But when you push the pencil of the beans, yes, they've gone higher, but the bottom line looks a little better on them. Also on corn, a few less bushels, we're going to need a few more pennies to the upside here to kind of get that to pencil out. If we can see the concern about record high prices in China, they're pricing corn's well over $9. Some of the deferred contracts are $10 a bushel. That kind of signals that China could continue to be a buyer here as we move through the winter. So I kind of watch that Chinese corn market fairly closely here for some price direction. But the simplest thing to do is if you're needing some cash flow or wanting to move it, go ahead and move it and replace it the same day. Chinese overall domestic growth is about 4.9%. Some theories on that. One is that the Chinese tourists, or the people who had a lot of money, instead of visiting other countries, they stayed home in their own country and bought food and traveled a little bit or invested in their own economy. But when you look at the Chinese retail sales breakdown, where most of the increase in consumption or expense went to, beverages were up 22%, tobacco and alcohol up 17%, cosmetics up 13%. So I don't know if it was the best health issue to see that growth and what category it went into, but at least they're spinning that their economy's okay so far.
You know, I was thinking about the fundamental side of the marketplace, demand in particular. Do you think, and you mentioned China as a particular a potential export market into the wintertime months, do you think that, and USDA has not updated the exports, or didn't at least last month, do you think that losses on the ethanol demand side can be made up in part by the export market for the coming or the current marketing year?
Yeah, that's part of it. There's ideas that China could import as much as 30 million metric tons. Before, you know, they only talked 5 to 7 million metric tons. And a good lion's share of that could come to the U.S. because we're the only available supply right at the moment here. If you look at Brazil, they're lowering import tariffs to bring grain into their country because they're oversold and they're going to need something to go on until they see some harvest activity pick up later on this late winter or early spring. But this huge corn markets for real exports, you look at the sales, you look at the shipments, all above. But not just China. All of a sudden, Mexico and other Asian countries are starting to enter the arena in here trying to capture some of this corn market before it gets too pricey on them. And the other thing, too, is feed. Feed usage continues to remain phenomenal, even though submission lanes category. And with this lower test weight number, this feed usage is going to remain somewhat strong.
What's into the cattle market for the day? Why is it lower on both feeders and live cattle?
The overall cash market or cutout value kind of just fell apart. It was heavy speculative selling, commodity fund selling today. If you look at a price chart, this December cattle market's been trading 108 to 113 for about 3 months and through here. We kind of broke out to the downside and saw some long liquidation in the beef sector. Also, too, the cash market, the futures were holding a premium. The December futures, 113, 112, when you got the cash market at 106. Now we're kind of more in line with the these futures at 105. It's in line with the cash market. It's a little early to do that, but it made up that ground here in the last two trading sessions.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always hear it again on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or you can look it up and listen to it in your favorite podcast applications, places like SoundCloud and Stitcher, NPR One, Spotify, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts too. Ben Brown from the Ohio State University and Extension there is with us this afternoon to take a look at the marketplace from the academic side, relatively speaking. Hey, Ben, thanks for being with us today. Tell me about markets and the fall harvest there in your part of the world.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me on. So things are rolling along in Ohio, and especially here in the Eastern Corn Belt. I actually spent the weekend, last weekend, in the Western Corn Belt in Kansas and Missouri. But out here in the Eastern Corn Belt, things are rolling along. You know, one of the things that I don't think is unique to us this year, as it's popping up elsewhere too, is you know, it's taking corn a while to dry down. We're still seeing some pretty high moisture corn, even though that it got planted on in time, if not early. It had a, you know, had dry August and early September, and we're still struggling with a little bit of high moisture issues in corn. Probably going to add a little bit to our drying cost when we look at, you know, what we're going to spend to dry that down or take dock at the elevator. But that'll be everybody's own decision. But harvest is rolling along, and you know, people are pleased with the price increases that we've seen over the last, I'm going to say 2 months at this point. And, you know, I think even to some extent, people are really disappointed that they managed their risk earlier in the summer when we're normally talking about risk management plans. A lot of people did what, quote unquote, is the right thing to do in terms of making sure and taking advantage of price patterns and signals. And now people are saying, oh, I sold too early. But we are seeing some better than expected soybean yields come off, and that's helping, you know, to kind of alleviate some of that frustration a little bit in terms of pricing too early. So overall, pretty good.
So what are the academic or fundamental things you've been looking at this point on the world market stage? So I guess I did see that South America has taken some export taxes off. Or import taxes off.
Absolutely. So up until about right this time, and even, I mean, now we've got a pretty good idea what U.S. production is going to look like. And in terms of what we've got, we've already got the September stocks report, or September 1 stocks report out of the way. So we have, you know, we made some adjustments this month on the USDA reports in terms of ending stocks for last year, which were expected from that September 1 stocks report. So, you know, a lot of that's out of our way now. And so our focus turns to demand, international demand, and then South American production. And, you know, we've been hearing, and, you know, the conversation had really been about, did South America, especially Brazil, oversell some of their commodities to China over the summer when we saw that just blistering pace of soybean exports in the Chinese market. And so we, you know, their local prices, both for animal feed, plus they've got some deflationary issues with the Brazilian real, continuing to deflate compared or weaken compared to the U.S. dollar. And so, you know, we've seen some potential and, you know, heard rumblings that, you know, they were going to be in the market to buy commodities. And I think this last weekend, we got the validation that we'd been looking for when Brazil announced that their September food inflation, especially for rice and soy oil, was coming in a lot stronger than what anybody expected and almost to concerning levels. And so they rolled back the import tariffs or taxes, if you will, on goods coming into Brazil from countries not in South America. So they do have trading agreements with countries in South America. For everybody else, it's usually an 8% tax into the country. They've rolled those back January 15th for soybean and soybean products like meal and oil, and then March 31st for corn. You know, that opens up some possibilities for different countries around the world, including the United States, to send product to South America and Brazil. They, you know, they're going to plant some pretty big crops because their producers are getting the signals to. But until that crop comes to fruition, it looks like they're going to be a little short and being looking for some imports from other places around the globe. So,
have you been having the acreage discussion for 2021 and what Ohio producers might do?
Yes, we have. More so this year than what we've had in the last couple of years. You know, we typically, you know, we plant 500,000 acres of wheat, which isn't that much when you consider that we have about 10 million acres of harvested acreage, which I know is a lot less than or harvested acres of all crops, or corn, soybeans, wheat. And I know that's a lot less than what you all have in Illinois and Iowa and other places. But, you know, for us, you know, wheat's kind of more of a strategic crop. It's used for pest pressure to break up the pest cycle, to break up some weed pressure. We also tend to see wheat going in places where people can get it off in May and June and then tile the field and do some field work. So my farmers have been asking about wheat, and I said, I think this is the year where we need to start thinking about wheat as a strategic move for some of these field work and agronomy issues, and start thinking about wheat this year as an economic signal. Because when you look at wheat, and especially if you can double crop that with soybeans behind it, both wheat and soybeans together are outperforming right now. Soybeans by themselves or corn by themselves. So if you can pair it together with soybeans, maybe get some straw. And I grant most people don't mess with the straw just because of the timing issue there in June when we're planting soybeans and corn and doing all sorts of stuff. But, you know, there's possibilities there. When we look at the corn-soybean rotation, we've been heavy soybeans. Ohio is typically a heavy soybean state. But the last couple of years, the soybean economic incentive has been, you know, upwards of $80 to $100 better than corn per acre. So that's really pulled us to soybeans. And so when we start looking at these soybeans after soybeans after soybeans, plus a couple of years of prevent plant that pushed us out of corn into soybeans, or we left it fallow and, you know, because we couldn't get anything planted, you know, wheat fits nicely into that rotation as well, especially if we're looking at doing soybeans again this year. And so, you know, we're starting to have some of those discussions, starting looking at, you know, the crop insurance guarantees, think in the March of what, you know, the March futures prices are looking right now, the December and November futures prices for corn and soybeans of 2021 that they, you know, are the forward curve is showing us for February and March when we're setting that projected price for crop insurance, and looking at some risk management there too. So just kind of taking everything into account, but it is becoming a bigger decision and a bigger talking point now. This is probably the earliest we started having these discussions since I've been in Ohio the last 4 years.
You'll have to forgive me, but they would have to make, unless they're planting spring wheat, they'd have to make that decision now.
Yes, right? Correct. Yep. And so that's why, I mean, wheat's a little bit behind because we've been so dry out here. I think it's dry everywhere. It's not just dry in the Eastern Corn Belt. We've been so dry out here that, you know, harvest has been rolling along. But people, I think, have been a little hesitant to put any wheat in the ground because we need moisture to get it up. And that's what I've been hearing is some people have planted wheat, but it just kind of sat there because we didn't have any moisture to pop it up. But, you know, while we're still at the tail end, you know, there's the potential to get some winter wheat still in. So,
hey, Ben, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He's at The Ohio State University. Mark Russo is here on this Monday to take a look at the weather forecast. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago. Thanks, Mark, for being with us. I appreciate that. Can we start right here in the Midwest today? Harvest weather and conditions are changing. It's gray and cold, and I guess there's been some rainfall. What can you tell me about the next week or two?
Well, Todd, the upcoming week here, it does look to be more active than what we've seen over the past several weeks. But then again, the past 3 or so weeks have been very dry here in the Corn Belt. So coming up, we are seeing at least some higher coverage rain events and totals across the belt. And specifically, our forecast for this week is calling for about 70% coverage of amounts above 0.3 inches. And so that will begin to slow things down a little bit, but again, slowing down from what has been just very rapid numbers as a result of the drier and even the warmer conditions here of late.
Do things stay the same or change for the following week?
It does look to be about the same here next week, and that some additional systems coming through and ultimately some, you know, additional slowdowns. But nothing at this time at least looks to really bog things down. No exceptionally wet patterns are expected.
Are we still worried about dryness from the Great Plains all the way through the Northern Plains?
Yeah, Todd, we are, especially in the southern and central plains where the dryness does look to continue over the next several weeks. So we just continue to not see any widespread meaningful precipitation that would significantly improve the soil moisture situation, which of course is in poor shape at this time. It's not a bone dry pattern, but overall activity looks very limited with these frontal passages coming through over the next couple of weeks.
By this time of year in South America, the closer you are to the equator, the more likely you are to be getting regular rainfall. That's important for producers in Mato Grosso and other places that produce soybeans. That's not been the case. Has that changed, or will it change?
Well, Todd, yeah, Mato Grosso and Center West Brazil is basically starting to see a pattern change right now. And up to this point, activity has been fairly limited, but this week looks to feature more widespread rains, more frequent thunderstorm development, which then looks to continue into next week. So all in all, it's an improving situation, albeit gradual, across center west Brazil. Elsewhere in Brazil, in particular southern Brazil, that's an area that we're adding to our watch list for dryness, as that region has been on has received below normal precipitation in recent weeks. And along with that, the dryness looks to continue over the next several weeks. So that's an area to watch as we move through month's end.
Is this part and parcel of La Nina that we've been talking about for some time?
Partly related to that, you know, typically throughout, and this is more just macro relationship, when you're in a La Nina event, you tend to have dryness more so in Argentina. At times that can be in southern Brazil. Other times it stays focused in Argentina. And some of the dryness that has already been experienced in Argentina, we can attribute to the La Nina event. For southern Brazil, again, historically, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag. So certainly some relationship there, and remains an area to watch.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Wrist Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Now, we're joined by Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County to discuss the agricultural cash grain markets. Hey, Greg, thanks for being with us. I was out and about, and it sure looks like crops are disappearing quickly in the eastern part of Illinois. How far along do you suppose producers are now?
I think most of the beans are done. I would say 95% of the beans are done in our area, maybe 99. Corn probably approaching half, maybe even a little over half, depending on the area. There was a fair amount of June planted and replanted corn that is still plenty wet, so that'll be another week or 10 days. But the rest of the corn seems to be drying down quickly, and now that beans are done, I think farmers are going to turn their attention to corn this week and next week.
And in the midst of all of this, the markets continue to run just slightly higher, at least for the day today. And gosh, they've been staying pretty steady for a while now, too.
Yes, that quarterly stocks report caught the funds on the wrong side. So the funds have gone from, you know, short corn position to long corn position. They've got a almost record long position in the soybean market. Lots of theories as to why they would buy contra-seasonally into the fall. But nevertheless, they are. So we're getting the opportunity to sell corn and beans at good prices. Farmers are selling a lot of beans across the scale, you know, at $10 plus. That's not a bad idea. And corn, we haven't seen a lot of corn sales yet, but the farmers are starting to kick the tires, so they're starting to ask about prices. And so I think that means we're getting close to where farmers are going to start releasing some corn and making some sales on corn as well.
What are your expectations for the basis over the next week and a half while farmers finish up corn, or 2 weeks?
The pipeline continues to be not full. I wouldn't say empty, but it's not full, which normally it is this time of year. So basis levels probably will continue to stay strong. Yields are okay, but I think with this corn being as dry as it is, farmers are able to store corn, 15-16% corn coming right out of the field in places where last year, for example, they didn't want to store corn at 21-25% moisture. So it feels like there's more space out there, and farmers are taking advantage of that. So we're seeing basis levels stay extremely strong right in through the fall harvest.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Greg Johnson. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report from the Andersons. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.